Hello, and a very warm welcome to The Front Page, the show in which we chew over three of the biggest stories from the week that was. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio today by Maddie Playle. Maddie, how are you?
Yeah, very good, Jonathan. Good to be in here on a sunny bank holiday and chewing the fat with yourself and David Jennings.
Exactly right. And through the magic of Skype, I'm joined by Deputy Irish Editor David Jennings. How are you, DJ?
Maddie just gave the game away. Before you even introduced me, she gave the game away, Johnny.
I wanted the big reveal of that we had you along, but there we go. How was the curry yesterday?
The curry was good, actually. Yeah, very enjoyable day. Good to see the emergence of White Birch as a proper Group 1 performer in the Tattersalls Gold Cup, and two emphatic Group 1 winners, actually, because Fallen Angel was terrific in the 1,000 guineas. And what's going on, Johnny? 4-0 to Britain in the big classic match. Cheltenham feels like light years ago. Yous are absolutely dominating us. You won't even give us a kick.
Well, soon they'll be stopping British runners going over to Ireland. We've jumped ahead of ourselves a little there with the first talking point today, which is DJ talking about those Irish classics. So take it away.
Yeah, I suppose we'll start on Saturday. What a day for Richard Hannon. I kind of thought it could be, given the O'Brien quotes leading up to the 2,000 guineas, and you know, he was very open about, like, unquestionably said, badly needed the run after a spring setback. River Tiber was the most forward, as he said, and did run actually really well. And I suppose answered some stamina doubts as well, River Tiber did. And Mountain Bear needed the run badly as well. But Richard Hannon spotted an opportunity and very much exploited it. Real kind of ballsy ride, I thought, by Sean Levy. You know, it was only an excellent, actually, colour piece by Conor Fennelly in the Racing Post on Sunday, pointed out that, you know, he rode for Aidan O'Brien twice in the race and finished last on both occasions. You know, feels like a lifetime ago now, but probably over a decade ago. And how his career has changed since going over to Britain and riding primarily for Richard Hannon. And it was one of them rides where you're kind of going, oh, if this goes wrong, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be on him, kind of, because he was off a pretty sedate pace and looked like he had plenty of ground to make up, I thought. You know, certainly early in the home straight, two out, didn't know if he was quite going to get there. And I know he won by a head, but it was kind of a snug head, wasn't it? It was kind of like, you know, 200 yards from the line, it was kind of inevitable. Hatton is just one of these horses that you just have to love. Just always turns up, runs his race. You know, he's turned out to be a far better three-year-old than I thought he was going to be. And it just sets up the season perfectly now, because you've got a St. James's Palace Stakes where you're going to have Rosalian against Noble Speech, the big rematch. And then you're going to throw who I think is going to actually win the race, Henry Longfellow in there, who's going to be on something of a recovery mission after his run in the French Guineas, where I just thought everything went completely wrong that day for Henry Longfellow. So that's going to be an absolute fascinating race on the first day of Royal Ascot. So yeah, fair play to Richard Hannon. Rosalian, loads of speed, classy miler. And then onto Sunday, we had the 1,000 guineas, and it was a demolition job, really. Like I said in my report, it was over two out. Like, she was stretching right away. And Fallen Angel, who I always think at Newmarket, and in fairness to Tom Siegel, Pricewise in the Racing Post, he did point out that, you know, she was the one that was not drawn well, that ran on the wrong part of the track. And he actually thought we were too harsh on Fallen Angel for a performance at Newmarket. But I think you're always going to be harsh when you've got a favourite beaten so comprehensively in a classic. And you just wondered, had she trained on from 2 to 3? If anything, I think she's got better. And the thing that really excites me is seeing her over 10 furlongs, because the further she went yesterday, the further away she was going from them. And it was like, it was really cozy, inside the final 100 yards or so. So she's top class. I think, obviously, it goes without saying, I think Stevie Wonder would know that the horse to take out of the race was Opera Singer. Aidan O'Brien was honestly shocked at how well she ran. I know people will be screaming at their screens at the moment saying, how could he be shocked? She was nearly favourite, or she was second favourite, and she was favourite all week. How could he be shocked? She finished third. He could not believe how well she ran. He couldn't believe it. He was astonished. And you can read like his post-race quotes about Opera Singer. She was obviously a good bit behind after her setback that forced her to miss Newmarket. So, you know, she's going to be fascinating. I think the Coronation Stakes is next for her. Doesn't look like Fallen Angel is going to go to the Coronation Stakes. It looks like Fallen Angel might go to the French Oaks. And she's going to take the world of beating in that. I couldn't imagine her not being favoured in that. And I'd be surprised if she's beaten in it. So it's going to be interesting. Opera Singer, obviously, could still be a star filly this season and she goes to Coronation Stakes. But as I said at the start of the show, worrying times for Irish flat racing. 4-0 to Britain. I think the last time it happened, was it, that the first two classics were won by Britain, was it 2004, Maddie?
It was, yeah. Perfect segue, DJ. That was the main talking point for me, Jonathan. And I can gloat a little bit. I can give DJ a bit of stick because, yeah, first time since 2004 since the British trainers won both the 2000 and the 1000 Irish Guineas at the Curragh. Really interesting as well because we had three consecutive winners on Saturday. You had Candleford winning for William Haggis. You had us winning the big sprint also. And then, of course, Rosalian, who we've already spoken about. That was a ballsy ride, as DJ touched upon, a fantastic performance. You kind of knew with the class that the horse had, he was always going to reel in his stablemate, Hartem, who I've just fallen in love with a little bit because he's so consistent and he's done what no one really expected him to do. But it was an exciting performance, which teed up a really nice Royal Ascot cracker. And that's what we want. We want these different form lines throwing up questions, and questions will be answered at the Royal meeting next month. As for the 1,000 guineas, it was a race that was dictated to by pace largely, and Fallen Angel was at the front of affairs and dominated really throughout. As DJ's touched upon, I really liked the run of Opera Singer. I thought Aidan O'Brien's comments the whole way through indicated that, you know, this wasn't her moment, and I think we're going to see hugely improved performances from her throughout the season. She's got all the fancy entries, and I'd be surprised if she went anyway other than forward from that effort, that third place effort. Under Ryan Moore on Sunday, the one to take out the race for me, DJ was saying it was really, really obvious. I thought the seventh, Queen of Thunder, had a massive price.
Yes.
125-1. She went straight into my tracker. I will be supporting her wherever she runs next. Travelled really strongly, hit a bit of trouble in running when she was switched, and then ran on really nicely to be beaten just six lengths in the end. Yes, I'm sure she wasn't the only one in the field who produced a performance that made you sit up and go, she's better than that, but she's definitely better than that. And I would definitely suggest that you put her in your Racing Post tracker. That's Queen of Thunder.
There you go. Come along for the tips as well. And obviously two really impressive British winners there. Will we have British winners of the Oaks on Friday and the Derby on Saturday, DJ?
Yeah, potentially. It's going to be like, I just wish it was tomorrow, the Derby, because, you know, last year, obviously, with Augusta then, there was a similar type of build-up to the Derby, but I don't think it was on the same scale of City of Troy. Yes, Aidan O'Brien bigged up Augusta then, you know, leading into his three-year-old career, but I don't think he did to the same extent of City as he did City of Troy. Like, the stuff he's been saying about City of Troy, that he's different to any horse he's ever trained and that he never gets tired, all that kind of stuff was just, it was like a little bit above all the other stuff he was saying for Augusta Rodin. So this is like, if you are a racing fan in any way, shape or form, even if you're predominantly jumps racing, the Derby on Saturday is going to be, in one way or another, the most fascinating race of 2024, because you've got a horse here who has been built up to be an absolute superstar and ran like a seller on his previous race. Like, it could, like, for like, I'm not working at Epsom on Saturday, but for Lee Mothershead and whoever else, I don't know if you're working there, Johnny or Maddie, whoever's working at Epsom on Saturday, like, this is why you get into racing journalism, for a day like Saturday, where One way or the other, you're going to get this massive story, because he's either going to win or he's not going to win. And it's a massive story one way or the other. Like, you're completely, like, I see City of Troy's as short as 7-4 in some places. Like, you're completely and utterly placing your faith in Aidan O'Brien here and completely backing the trainer rather than the horse. Because when that horse ran at Newmarket straight after the race, I could not believe he was only 7-1. I wouldn't have backed him at 70-1. Now he's 7-4. Never mind 7-1. Now he's 7-4. Yes, all the dangers have gone by the wayside, and it's not going to be a vintage Derby. But this is a monumental task to bring this horse back from what he showed at Newmarket. And yeah, look, we've heard the excuses, and I know people think they're watery excuses, but he is pretty adamant with the excuses that the heartbeat raised up to such a high level going into the stalls that he never got a breather, and that he raced on the one breath for the first three furlongs of the race. Look, if he's right, it's going to be unbelievable. Do I think City of Troy will win the Derby? I don't. I really don't. Like, this is completely after timing now, but I did think Auguste Rodin would win the Derby last year. Just thought the ground, I thought the excuse for Auguste Rodin was better than the excuse for City of Troy. Like, last year in Newmarket, the ground was bottomless. It was a mess of a race. It's worked out to be possibly or probably the worst 2,000 guineas of all time if you take out Auguste Rodin and City of Troy, or Auguste Rodin and Little Big Bear out of the race. Like, it's worked out shocking, like absolutely shocking. Like, even see Royal Scotsman the other day, he was really, really poor in the lock inch. So I think this is a bigger ask for City of Troy. I don't think he'll win, but I don't know what's going to beat him. I think Los Angeles, who they don't hold in the same caliber as City of Troy, but if you were just to look at him, I was in Leperstown when he won his trial. Like, he is exactly what you want a Derby winner to look like. He's imposing, he's strong, he's gorgeous colour. He's just, if you were to pick a Derby horse just on looks, I would say it would be Los Angeles. He's exactly what you want. Whether he's good enough and whether he's quick enough is the biggest question, because he looks like he just doesn't do anything in a hurry. But, you know, you're going to need to stay. Look, it's going to be fascinating. As regards the Oaks on Friday, I do really fancy a filly in the Oaks. I fancy Azalea for Dermot Weld. Thought she won the Salisbury Stakes, you know, when she probably wasn't finely tuned for her comeback. I thought she always was going to make a smashing three-year-old. And Dermot Weld is a master at getting fillies to progress as they get older. The form wasn't really ranked by Purple Lily, who was second in Salisbury Stakes in the 1,000 guineas on Sunday, but she still ran reasonably well. I think Azalea is just a filly who's, you know, she's nicely balanced, she's a strong stayer, she's a good attitude. For me, she's one of the better bets over the 2 days at Epsom. I'd be very much in the Azalea camp.
And Maddie, over to you. Which camps are you in for the Oaks and Derby? They both, to me, just on a broader point, they both look really wide open this year. We've got two fairly short price favourites, but there's question marks over both of them.
Yeah, that's what makes it interesting. In a way, I don't think it's the most compelling Derby and Oaks we've had. I see DJ's point in that the City of Troy Willie won't he thing is fascinating.
How could you not be compelled, Maddie?
I'm compelled by the City of Troy conundrum, but I just don't think there's that much strength in depth to either race. And I guess, DJ, my approach is wanting to take on these favourites. I'm finding it really difficult to know where to go because I don't like them, but I don't really like anything that's coming up against them either. Ultimately, in the Oaks, I came down, well, in both races, actually, I came down on Rafe Beckett. In the Oaks, You Got To Me, I think, is the one who is overpriced, who won the Lingfield trial. Understandably, there's a train of thought that she bossed that race and dominated it due to the pace, but I think given her pedigree and given her position in the market, she probably deserves to be a little bit shorter. You know, I like the idea that she could just go off out in front again and get a really nice run of the race. So I think she's quite a big price. And then again, Rafe Beckett, he knows what it takes to train classic winners at Epsom. And I think Macduff's a bit of a sleeper in the Derby market, second behind Arabian Crown in the Sandown trial. You can bet your bottom dollar this horse is going to be produced right for the day. And he is a big price too. But yeah, there's so many imponderables. I mean, I quite like Diego Velasquez, and DJ's suggesting that he's probably not going to run. They're not going to be huge fields. They're going to be interesting fields, though. I'm looking forward to it, but I don't think there's going to be loads and loads of really top-class horses coming out of both races this year, maybe.
And DJ, if you're somebody who's quite likes the idea of backing an Aidan O'Brien horse, is there any reason to be concerned at all by his sort of record in the classics so far this season? I mean, he's a very high bar we're setting Aidan O'Brien, but that's his own fault for all his success. It's not that they've been running badly, he just hasn't won one yet.
Yeah, and I have a feature with Aidan in the Racing Post on Thursday, so I don't want to divulge too much, but he has adopted a different approach in recent years, and he explains why he's adopted a different approach, because he says that the flat season now is not like the flat season of 10 years ago. It goes on to, he was using kind of Dubai almost in March as the end of the season. And, you know, with Hong Kong and all the different various different places, the Breeders' Cup, and the season is so long now that if you have these horses cherry ripe, there you go again, you can't say ripe without saying cherry ripe for some reason. It's one of those words you just can't say on its own. But he is never going to have his horses cherry ripe for the two guineas at Newmarket, because he feels if he has them peaking then, there is no way they can progress throughout the season. And it was fascinating listening to him, and just that different approach and how it's building up to a crescendo. I suppose it is a little bit like Willie Mullins over jumps. You know, Willie Mullins doesn't target that Down Royal meeting in November, and Gordon Elliott does. And you often see at the start of the season, we kind of go, oh, God, I wonder, has Willie got the team we thought he had this season? Because, you know, he hasn't had a great October. November's been pretty quiet. And even that, you know, Royal Bond, Hatton's Grace, Drimmore Day at Fairy House, it's a meeting that Gordon Elliott dominates more than Willie Mullins, and that's early December. But that's because Cheltenham is in March, Punchestown is in April, and he wants his team to stay and to progress throughout the season. So that's a different approach by Aidan O'Brien. He obviously would have loved to have won a classic by now. There's four gone and he's 0 from 4. And I did a column last season in September saying that this was the best bunch of Ballydoyle juveniles, last season's bunch, since 2001, when High Chaparral, Hawkwing, Johannesburg, all them came out in 2001, all at the same time from the same place. And I said basically that City of Troy, Henry Longfellow, Diego Velazquez, River Tiber, unquestionable. I thought those five were on a par potentially with the five that I've just mentioned there. And at the moment, it's looking like, not for the first time, I'm completely wrong. But there's still time for that to be right. And it will need to start with City of Troy winning the Derby on Saturday. I think the O'Brien horses are just going to start to turn a corner now that we get into June. And midsummer into the autumn, I think it's going to be just business as usual for Ballydoyle.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be an interesting race, Manny. And there's been two other sort of talking points this week, one relating to a jockey change.
Callum Shepherd, of course, no longer going to be on Ambient Friendly. Rab Havlin, who's having an incredible time of things, obviously won the Lock In John Audience. And then I was at Sandown the other night when he enjoyed another big success on Sweet William, who, of course, his owner, Philippa Cooper, likes him to ride those horses and not the stable jockey, which was Frankie Dettori and is now Kieran Schumach. So Rab Havlin's had a whirlwind couple of weeks and he's now going to ride the Lingfield Derby trial winner and the impressive one at that. But I must confess, I was really, you know, we're used to seeing these changes happen a lot. And of course, it's the owner's prerogative. But I was really disappointed by this. I think a lot of people share those sentiments. Callum's a really talented up and coming jockey, done absolutely nothing wrong on the horse. In fact, I thought he rode him brilliantly at Lingfield. To me, there was just absolutely no reason to take him off the horse. I believe he's got a better winning record than Rab Havlin has got at Epsom anyway. And although, yes, you want an experienced rider in the Derby, you know, we've seen this happen so many times before. You know, Tom Marcondes was jocked off English King for Frankie Dettori. Rarely does it ever seem to make the difference. And I just think loyalty and giving people a chance are qualities that I really like to see in top-class sport. And I think it's a shame that we've not been allowed to see that happen. But in other news, it was really good to see Callum aboard one of his flagship horses last week on Isle of Jura at Goodwood. And I actually backed that horse for the Melbourne Cup at 50-1. I think that's a really, really good bet. And it's interesting that in a season where Callum's clearly had a big ride taken away from him, it's good that he's still got another huge ride who has already taken him all over the world, Bahrain principally, where he won the Triple Crown. But hopefully this is a horse who can take him right up to Group 1 level on a regular basis. Love that horse, love the loyalty that connections have shown him. And it's just a shame we won't be able to see him in the Derby. But that said, best of luck to Rab. And Ambient Friendly, he's a fascinating contender. I know Paul Keighley fancies him a lot. So we'll have to see how he gets on. They're on ground watch, I believe, at the minute.
Yes.
You know, the thing that baffles me about this whole losing the ride in the Derby to Rab Havlin, like, if you, like, just say, this is probably a stupid example, but it's just the first thing that came into my mind, right? If you had Pep Guardiola, just say, playing a Champions League final. The one thing he would be definitely, any manager I've played under at any level of, you know, be it underage or when I played adult football, the one thing they emphasise always when you get to a final is that it's just another game. We have to treat this match exactly the same as all the others that got us in this position in the first place. So, you know, that's how you instill confidence in your team, by just telling them, look, whatever you did in the semi-final, we're going to do exactly the same in the final. Just because the word final is there doesn't mean it's any different. You still have to do the same thing. It's still the same. It's still 90 minutes. It's still whatever. And this is what I don't get about the Derby. Like, this, the Ambient Friendly Camp have brought all this attention on themselves and said, you know, it's the Derby. We need more experience from Robert Havlin. I just think it's absolutely bonkers.
Yeah,
nothing
I
to do with either jockey. But if I was James Fanshawe and I was the Greddies, who are fantastic supporters of the game, and, you know, this is, you know, I don't want to be criticising them too much because I think they're, you know, they've been brilliant over the years with some fantastic horses. But, like, I would be saying to myself, right, we've won a trial, we're second favourite for the Derby. Let's keep everything the same. Let's, whatever we did going into Lingfield, let's keep it the same. Let's not draw attention to ourselves. Let's just, it's just another game. It's just another race. Yes, it's the Derby. Yes, it's massive. But it's just another race. I don't get this whole, it's the Derby, everything has to change, we need a new jockey, we need to do everything differently because it's the Derby. It's just another race, lads.
I think as well, you have to ask the question, how much are you risking by introducing a new relationship into the mix? You know, Callum clearly knows this horse very well, has a good relationship with him. And yes, we've seen Rab riding Ambient Friendly out on the gallops, but is that like for like when you've, you know, helped produce a horse all the way through and ridden him regularly at home? I'm not sure. I totally agree with DJ, and I said on X at the time, I think it was a nonsense decision, and I stand by that.
On the subject of nonsense decisions, DJ, I think you might have a view on the plans to extend the Derby Festival to a week.
Yeah, I'll choose my words wisely here. Look, we need to be condensing the best talent into making, you know, a spectacle as good as it can be. And at the moment, personally, I think your 2 days at Epsom on Friday and Saturday are, you know, dripping with quality. And if you're going to extend this out to 7 days, you're going to get so many people losing interest. And the cards that make up the other days are just going to be poor quality. And what we need around our big festivals is to increase the quality and reduce the number of days, not increase the number of days and reduce the quality. It's the complete opposite of what we should be doing. Like, we've been screaming about Cheltenham for so long that it needs to go back to 3 days, which it never will. But we've been screaming, pleading with the authorities to condense the quality into a shorter program. And now it seems at Epsom, we're looking for this 7-day carnival, if rumours are to be believed or whatever the report suggests. And, like, it's just, I don't know what you guys think, but I just think it's exactly the opposite of what we need to be doing. And it's baffling whether it's going to happen or not, I don't know. But just imagine what the cards on 5 of the days are going to be like, given the horse population. Like, it's going to be poor quality. We're going to have fans losing interest, and I think they need a big, big rethink, because it's exactly the opposite to what I'd be doing.
Yeah, and plans are still up in the air. I think what's sort of been provisionally looked at, and Lee mentioned this in his column, is having one of the race days on a Saturday, perhaps the Oaks, followed by the Coronation Cup card on a Wednesday with the Derby on a Saturday. So it wouldn't be that much more racing, but I think your point still stands. If you're thinking of having a bet at Epsom this week, either in the Oaks or the Derby, you've had tips for both there, please do check out our free bet offers. Moving on to our second story, Maddie, what have you got for us?
Yeah, so controversial story welcome news to a lot of participants in racing is that Sunday evening racing, it was announced last week that it will be scrapped. There was a six meeting all-weather trial, and it's been abandoned due to lack of punter engagement and so much negative feedback and negative press from members of the weighing room, from stable staff, from a lot of trainers as well. The main point, really, I suppose, is that in order for these meetings to be seen as feasible, they had to outperform midweek floodlit meetings by 15 to 20%, which it didn't do. It didn't achieve that. There were fluctuations. Some performed better than others, but like-for-like turnover was down 3%, which is obviously fairly significant. It's worth mentioning there's a lot of negativity around this story, and that's understandable given the pressures on racing's workforce and, you know, Sunday evenings being traditionally a social time, a time to be spent with families, etc. And you're already talking about an industry that operates in incredibly unsociable hours, and you have to be incredibly flexible. But there were extra payments, and one of the main pluses, in theory, of Sunday evening racing was the increased prize money. But ultimately, those two things didn't achieve the balance and weren't sufficient enough to see this trial be a success. As I say, one of the main threads of this story was the negative feedback from the jockeys. You wrote a story, I believe, about a third of the jockeys basically saying that they would never support it, which is just pretty damning, really. I know anecdotally that certain jockeys, although overall they may have disagreed with the concept, it provided them with an opportunity to earn some more money. As I say, there were pretty hefty bonuses, and depending on their individual situations, it gave them an opportunity to earn more money, and they weren't necessarily against it for that reason. But ultimately, it was never enough for it to be an overall positive overhaul and for these meetings to be implemented full time. I think this is good news to most people who've been engaged with this story because of, as you've touched upon in your story, the opposition to it was so strong and so ferocious. And I think there are things that we can learn from it, though. And I think it's the BHA have come out and since said they're not scrapping the idea altogether. I don't think realistically it's going to be considered again for a long time, given that it failed to do what it set out to do. And with just six meetings, you have to ask yourself, well, if it's only taken six meetings for them to understand that this is not going to be a solution to some of racing's problems, then that speaks volumes. But at the same time, you know, the BHA have vowed to gather all the data that they can from this trial period. And ultimately, the more we can learn about our fixtures, the more we can learn about how much levy income they're going to generate, the more we can learn about our workforce and the staffing issues in British racing, the better. And the Horse Racing Industry People Board are going to try and address the data and the staff shortages, because Callum Shepherd, who we've just spoken about, was among one of the members of the weighing room talking about pressure on staff and the fact that, you know, we're a very stripped back industry as it is, and we demand a lot from our workforce, and we just can't cater for these Sunday evening meetings. For me personally, I think this is definitely a good thing. I'm not saying that there aren't positives we can reflect on. I'm not saying there's not lessons we can learn. I think to try and be more positive, there definitely are. But at the same time, it just didn't seem a good idea. It's proven now not to be a worthwhile idea in terms of the money it's going to generate and the punting engagement it's going to have and how the participants feel about it. So I think it's a good idea that ultimately the BHA have listened to the feedback they've received and the data that they've gathered. We have to try things in this game. You know, we come on the show every week and we talk about racing's downfalls and failures. There may be a bit more of that in just a moment's time, but we have to try and innovate and try new things. So it's good that there was a trial period given, much like premierisation. The game is seeking to improve its standing and its situation, but also to cut its losses and go, do you know what, that didn't work. Fine, we'll move on, we'll try again. And I think that's what's happened with Sunday evening racing. But I, for one, you know, speaking to a lot of racing participants on a daily basis, whether it's trainers, friends, stable staff, people who work in the industry in any capacity. You know, we know how hard they work, and I think a Sunday evening off and the knock-on effects that has, not only on people working in the yards, but then in terms of how they resource the rest of the week per se, I think this is just a good move, and it's right that people have been listened to because they are the lifeblood of our sport and we need to support them now more than ever.
No, absolutely. And I'm probably similarly to you, quite torn always between my default position is let's try something new because I know it is going to take sort of radical ideas, outside the box thinking to try and push racing into a position where it is more financially secure and more of a sort of viable and interesting proposition commercially. DJ, were you surprised at all by just the strength of feeling against these Sunday evening cards, or was it fully justified?
About as surprised as I am when I step on a weighing scales, Johnny. No, wasn't surprised at all. We do need new ideas, but we don't need stupid ideas. This baffled me from the word go, to be honest with you. You can't have racing, and I know we can't think about the stable staff totally, like they're not 100% of what needs to be thought about, but like this was one area where we did really need to think about them, and I think to ask them to work on Sunday nights and Sunday evenings, like they're not doing 5 days a week anyway, and to add this extra burden on top of them, it was never going to work. And I think we often maybe don't give enough consideration to stable staff and to, you know, the people who, the heartbeat of the sport, like we don't treat them with probably the respect that we should, because, you know, we're thinking of ways of making money and ways of growing the industry. But you can't grow the industry without the people who are making the industry. And yeah, we tried it, and fair enough, like well done for trying things, and it didn't work, and you know, kudos to those for you know, pulling the plug on it quite early. But it was never going to work. It was never, like, I know betting wise, and I've read all the different views on the subject and how Sunday evenings are prime betting times, but this was just one thing that I think the actual the stable staff outweighed the betting demand almost. So I'm glad they've pulled the plug on it. You know, as you said, you know, we need new ideas, we need innovation, we need clever innovation. This was one thing that just didn't work, was never going to work. The vibes were very bad from the outset. And yeah, I'm glad it's gone.
In a way, I was quite surprised that they failed to perform as remarkably as they did in not reaching that 50 to 20% outperforming of the other floodlit meetings. And I guess the question is why? And does this link back to lessons we can learn? And is it ultimately about how we're packaging racing? Is it promotion? I think certainly with more promotion, more awareness of some of racing's initiatives, it could probably be driven more and perhaps be more successful. So that's maybe something that I was surprised by, that they did sort of fail so spectacularly. And maybe it's about how these things are communicated rather than necessarily how the bare bones of the initiative work. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think of all the metrics I thought Sunday evening racing was going to fail on, I didn't think it would be betting turnover. Yeah. I thought it would be staff well-being. I thought it would be jockeys' participation. I thought it would be field sizes. I thought it would be any number of those things, attendances. Certainly not betting turnover, because I thought the logic was reasonably sound in that this is a pretty open window where people are engaging with sport generally. Can we get them to come and have a bet on racing? It seemed fairly...
It's quite worrying, isn't it? The fact that, as you say, this is a point that would make sense for people to engage with punting on racing, and they haven't.
I think it's a limited-ish sample size. Okay. That's not to say I'm supportive. I think they've made absolutely the right call knocking it on the head, but it is difficult to draw any sort of massive conclusions. I think the other factors just completely outweigh the potential benefit from betting turnover in that it doesn't work from a staff well-being point of view. The jockeys aren't really interested. So yeah, that one has been consigned to history for now. They have, BHA is open to having a look again, as it ought to be, but when that will be, we don't know. Another thing that has been consigned to history is the negotiations between BHA and betting on levy reform, again, at least for now. So if you might have noticed a fairly sizable bit of political news on Wednesday, Rishi Sunak came out, got very wet, and announced that there will be a general election on July 4th. Now, what does that mean for racing? In the immediate aftermath of the election, it was confirmed that the long-running negotiations between the BHA and the betting industry through the Betting Gaming Council, the BGC, had essentially collapsed. Now, that was followed by a war of words, really. The BHA Chief Executive Julie Harrington accused the Betting and Gaming Council of reneging on a deal that was on the table, while the BGC said, look, nothing's agreed till it's all agreed, and we weren't quite at that point. It's a very difficult situation that British Racing now finds itself in, because it was almost relying on the government to pressure the betting industry to come to a deal with racing. The government had set a deadline of last week. It was basically banging their heads together and saying, right, you need to come up with a deal or we'll intervene. There's not going to be a parliamentary solution to this, so work it out amongst yourselves, essentially. And what we have now is, after months and months of hard work behind the scene and negotiations, a situation where we don't really have anything. There is no certainty. There is no levy deal that's been signed off. The importance of that is that it was really pitched by the BHA and indeed the government as almost a counter to the potential damage likely to be caused by the government's white paper, most notably affordability checks. British Racing had hung its hat on the fact that while there will necessarily, not necessarily, while there will be some damage caused by affordability checks, the scale of which we still don't quite know, we will have levy reform to at least patch up some of that and offer some sort of regeneration to British Racing's finances. Now we are just in a complete mess where we don't have that situation. We might now have a completely new government, if you're to believe the polls, a Labour government from July 4th following that general election. In short, an awful lot of uncertainty after an awful lot of talking, a lot of finger pointing, and British Racing's no clearer on where it stands with potential levy reform. Maddie. An awful lot to unpack there. It's not the first time we've been here with these sort of discussions going on behind the scenes between British Racing and bookmakers. It's another blow to British Racing's finances.
Of course it is. You know, the levy is such an integral part of how British Racing is run, and these talks were going to be key into at least understanding where we could be financially on one hand through that perspective, and now they've collapsed. You know, it's going to have major consequences. It's just an absolute disaster, really, for racing. And the fact that now not only have there not been an agreement reached, but we're talking about, you know, a switch in government in July, if we're led to believe those polls, that's going to bring with it, as you say, more uncertainty, more delay. And that's not what British Racing needs at this time when it's facing a catalogue of problems, one of which is mentioned is the affordability checks. I guess another point to bring into play is, you know, traditionally Labour has had a slightly rockier relationship with gambling and the Conservatives, but on the same front, how much more damage can be done to British Racing at this stage? And it's impossible to know what our industry would look like under a Labour government at this stage. So it's just really difficult to know the direction of travel in British Racing and the government position on it at the moment, because these talks have collapsed and now we're talking about, you know, having a wholesale switch of those in power. So it's a challenging time, and this is not good news for racing at all.
And how important is that outreach to Labour MPs? I know the BHA has been accused of being a little bit slow off the mark there in reaching out to potential Labour MPs. How important is it that they are now on the front foot?
I mean, so important. You know, these are people who are going to be helping make incredibly important decisions about the future of British racing, and we need to engage them and make sure that they are understanding of the sports situation and in a position to be able to work towards a better future for British racing. So these relationships absolutely need to be considered. And I think, yeah, it'd be fair to say so far that we're not necessarily in a totally comfortable position with that either. It's just a really, really important time for British racing, with discussions going on at the moment with the white paper, with the levy reform. That's, you know, this deadline's not been reached, it's been passed, and now there's just so much more uncertainty up in the air. So this doesn't spell great news, but as we often say on this show, Jonathan, it's going to be a case of waiting to see what happens.
Absolutely. And DJ, you've been watching from afar. I know Ireland has its own little permutations going on with gambling law and what that might mean for the racing industry. But what's your take on and what's been happening in Britain?
Yeah, it's obviously a backward step. You know, when you hear Julie Harrington saying that, you kind of felt that there was kind of progress happening behind the scenes. And now it's like, bang, it's like, right, that's the end of that. And it's just this uncertainty again. And I think that's the buzzword at the moment in racing, isn't it? Uncertainty. And this just adds further fuel to the uncertainty. Worrying, disappointing. And God, the next year in racing. God, imagine, like, if we're doing this show in 12 months' time, if any of the three of us haven't been sacked by then, we're probably the only one in that running. But, like, imagine doing the show in 12 months' time and, you know, the 27th of May 2025, like the landscape of racing, we're going to know so much more about the future of racing. Like, it's going to be completely different. And, you know, we're really at crunch time in Britain and in Ireland, like with this gambling regulation bill in Ireland. Like, we're, you know, it's at the stage now where our worst fears are basically coming true. So it's going to be a big, big couple of months from now till the end of 2024. You know, if you're not worried, you should be. You really should.
A sobering thought for a bank holiday Monday front page, of course. If you are wanting to keep up with the latest on levy reform, the latest news and opinions, the behind the scenes of those negotiations, then there are pieces in the works, and you should sign up to Members Club Ultimate for all the best journalism comment from Maddie, DJ, myself and many others besides, as well as top tipping as well, heading into Epsom this weekend.
Get 50% off your first 3 months in the Racing Post Members Club. As a member, you get access to the digital newspaper exclusively available to members the night before. You'll get daily tips from the likes of Pricewise, Tom Siegel, Robbie Wilders and Paul Keighley. Enjoy award-winning journalism from the industry's best writers and watch replays from all British and Irish racing, now available within the Racing Post app. Subscribe today and get 50% off your first 3 months.
All that remains is for me to decide which story goes on this week's front page. Sunday evening racing, of course, a hot topic in recent weeks. The levy reform and all things government and affordability checks will continue to roll on. But in the interest of protecting the prestige of the Derby, and given DJ's enormous excitement about it this week, and indeed ours, I will be giving the winning story on our front page to David Jennings. A fist bump there from DJ, a fitting way to end the show. Thank you to my guests, Maddie, DJ. I've been Jonathan Harding. Please be sure to join us again next week for another edition of The Front Page.